Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store-wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor of AllYouCanHeat.com. With me, as always, it's David Rimmel. How you doing, David?
I am doing great. It's a positive day for the Heat Nation, and I think we're ready to discuss all things Miami Heat related.
All good things Miami Heat related. Nothing but good things going on in Heatland right now.
Absolutely.
Recording this on a Monday, the day after the Heat beat the Nets, their first win in four games. Right? So, in about a week. So it's been nice. It was a weird feeling. Wasn't really sure how to approach it, but I kind of got the feeling in that game towards the end that the Heat didn't really remember how to win games. They almost let that one slip away.
Yeah, they did. It was curious because, you know, they had a nice lead going into about the, I want to say the 3.5 minute mark, maybe even a little bit over that. And looking at my notes here, they were up 9, I think, with over 3.5 minutes left. And then they wound up scoring just 5 points the rest of the way. And uncharacteristic misses, too, not just from the floor, but also at the line. Dwayne Wade, who's normally pretty clutch at the free throw line, missed a bunch of free throws. It was just a sad, sorry display there. So that certainly backs up your point about forgetting how to win, because they would turn the ball over, then they would throw, you know, put up a bad shot, and they would turn it over again. And then when Brooklyn had no choice but to foul in order to try and cut into that time deficit, Miami still couldn't capitalize. So that was a nail biter, to say the least.
Yeah, and Wade almost turned it over on that last foul. He kind of ended up being a jump ball. So he actually technically, I guess, did turn it over because we lost the jump ball. But I blamed Tony Florentino because he mentioned earlier in that first half that Wade had hit like 23 straight free throws, and I hadn't even realized that. I probably should have known that, but I didn't.
That's right.
And as soon as he mentioned that, I think he missed a free throw. He went like 1-for-2 at the line or something, and then he ended up missing.
I actually heard the Nets broadcast, and so I think it was
listening to Ian Eagle?
Yeah, so he actually had mentioned it, and then Wade hits his next two. So I guess that streak had gone up to about 25 or so,
okay. And
then he would wind up missing a whole bunch for the rest of the game. But, yeah, interesting point. So, but either way, we could either blame Fiorentino or Eagle, but either one.
Yeah, we'll just blame both of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're right, because they had a lead, and I actually started working on the post-game grades. So I have the game up on my laptop on League Pass, so I'm still listening to it, but we're up 9. I'm like, okay, I could start working on this game recap a little bit. And so I'm listening, and I just start hearing him missing free throws and stuff, and I'm just like, oh my God, what's going on here? So I had to like close the recap and actually have to watch the game, and really couldn't get back into it until about like 15 seconds left. I hate games like that, because I was really worried because that game, and I tweeted it during the game, it felt like the Magic game where it was a well played game overall. The Nets just ended up hitting some shots at the end. Things just didn't really go right. The team just kind of forgot how to win, where this team, you know, the last 4 years was always good at closing out games for the most part. It just seemed like the Heat didn't remember how to do that, and they were about to let it slip away again. And I was really nervous there at the end.
Yeah. How far have we dropped where we're like sweating out a victory over the Brooklyn Nets, you know, 30-something games into the season?
And Chris Bosh at the end of the game, I think it was Chris Bosh, said, you forget how hard it is to win sometimes. And I think that's what we took for granted these last 4 years was how easily this team can just go on a run, number one, where it's just, you would watch a game and you say, okay, they really need like a 14-2 run right about now. And sure enough, they would come out with it. And just within 2 minutes, it was like a 14-2 run.
Right.
And that just seems so rare now.
Right. I mean, I don't think that, well, certainly that hasn't happened for the Miami Heat all season long. I'm trying to think. And I mean, I know you and I have talked about it on a number of occasions. Maybe that glorious win over the Mavericks where we were passing the ball at an elite level. and we were connecting from three-point range, et cetera.
It seems so long ago.
I'm sorry?
It seems so long ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When you're still looking forward to McRoberts coming back and you're thinking, man, this could be a really elite offense, and then all of a sudden you're struggling to score 80-plus points per game. Yeah, we really certainly did take it for granted. Maybe even not necessarily take it for granted, but you really did assume that it was capable of happening at any moment, and maybe that's the definition of taking it for granted, so I take back what I just said. But it certainly was something glorious. You never really felt out of it, right? I mean, think about just the Nets game where you've got the last 4 minutes there and you're going, oh, you've got a comfortable lead. There's no way any team's going to come back on you, and then they do, and you're struggling to find any kind of scoring whatsoever. I'm looking at it right now. Last few possessions were a turnover, an offensive foul and a turnover, a missed field goal, another missed field goal, another missed field goal, and then missed free throws by Wade. That is a glorious end to the game right there.
And what is it that is causing this? And the players are asked about it almost after every loss, and they can't put a finger on it. And I don't think anybody's really successfully figured out what it is. Is it just like a... Is it a mental thing? Is it just a lack of execution? Is there something specific that defenses are doing at the end of games that just doesn't translate well for the Heat offense? Because it seems to come down to offensive things. Like they're turning the ball over at the end of games, not making shots. I don't know if our defense is necessarily the problem, where it's kind of the problem during games, I think, especially during like the third quarters,
sure,
where teams just start shooting the lights out.
Right.
Nobody can really tell what's going on.
I hate to put the blame on any one player,
right,
but I would say that the bulk of it has to fall on Wade.
Mm-hmm.
I think one, the absence of LeBron James, and I know it's been a recurring theme, which I hate bringing up, but clearly, you know, you relied on him over the last 4 years. The team, you know, even if he was just facilitating the offense, he was going to generate points somehow, even if he wasn't doing the scoring himself. So with that playmaker gone, it's increasingly difficult. So then you're kind of falling back on Wade, you know, because Chris Bosh missed a lot of games, and Wade was still, you know, the natural, well, much more easy to create his own shot, mm-hmm, than for Chris Bosh. So I think he's the guy who the Heat have relied on to get some points towards the end of the games. And it's happened on some occasions, but on those occasions, like last night, he falls really flat, and he's not able to hit anything, and he's pulling up these ridiculous jumpers. I noticed even during the third and early in the fourth quarter, he was really settling for that mid-range to almost long-range jump shot, not quite three-pointers, but maybe 20, 21 feet just inside the three-point line with, you know, a heck of a lot of time left on the shot clock, and he would just step in, you know, beyond the line, and all of a sudden, you know, he would just rise up and take a long-range shot. These are, you know, obviously not very high percentage shots. It's an analytics nightmare, and you wonder what it is about Wade, whether or not he's getting tired. And it goes to the overall theme that you and I talked about previously regarding why the Heat struggle in the second half of games. Maybe it's Wade. Maybe he's just, you know, he's overall healthy, but maybe there's just a sense of fatigue. Maybe he's trying to do too much. Maybe he has a little bit more energy in the first half, and then by the time the third and fourth quarter rolls around, he's settling for these long-range jump shots because he can't get to the rim the way he would in the first and second quarters.
And I don't know what the alternative is, right? Is it more pick-and-rolls with Chris Bosh? I certainly think that would help. I think I tweeted at the end of last night's game something like, you know, they need to get more pick and pops with Bosh, because Chris Bosh actually tried handling the ball a couple times and tried to make things happen. It was just off the dribble kind of stuff, and that's nice to see in like the first half of a game, but when it's in the end in crunch time, you don't really want to see that. You want to see them execute a real offense, and I know that pick and pop is Miami's bread and butter, and it's almost their single play that they run now, but if you're going to run it at the end of games, because that's the easiest buckets that you're getting throughout the game.
Right.
My other thing is, you know how in like the NFL where you talk about how receivers can separate and how that creates so much more for a quarterback?
Sure.
I'm questioning the ability for everybody to get open around Dwayne Wade, and I'm wondering if how big of an impact that has. Because even though LeBron James is a masterful creator and just has such gravity and such a great passer and all the things we know about LeBron and witnessed from him, He was also passing to guys that knew how to get open. Shane Battier was a pro at it. Ray Allen was one of the best ever at just getting open. And now they don't really have that. Mike Miller is very good at it. And they don't really have that now. I see Chalmers and Norris Cole constantly struggling to get away from their defender. Luol Deng and Danny Granger aren't the fastest afoot anymore, so they're struggling to get open at times. And I'm wondering how big of an impact that has, if Wade even has those guys to pass it to, and for guys that were just so good at getting open at the end of games, I don't know if we have that anymore.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't ESPN's Tom Haberstroh did an analysis of players' quote-unquote gravity, meaning, you know, how they draw defenses in, and didn't Wade rank, like, near the top as far as that kind of gravitational pull is concerned?
I didn't see that. Was that recent?
I want to say it was toward the beginning of the season, and I think it was when Wade was, you know, again, with the absence of James, I guess the easy narrative was, is Wade still a high-level facilitator, playmaker, et cetera? And he showed that early in the season that he is, you know, when the Heat looked like they were much more impressive than people and experts had expected them to be. So I think it kind of fit very nicely with the fact that Wade was playing well, the team was playing at a pretty high level, and then the analytics certainly backed it up. But I think even that term you use, gravity, is what Tom Haberstroh used in his piece. So I'll have to look it up. You have to have that, you know, insider subscription, which I do not. But you can go and find that piece. And I think Wade, like I said, was ranked near the top as far as
I would believe defenders. It. By the eye test, I would absolutely believe it. But the other thing with this offense, it's so ISO heavy at the end of games that the people just, like, Deng and Granger and all those guys are just standing around. It'd be nice to see them run some real plays.
Well, you know, we were talking about what we could do in late in the games. Mm-hmm. What happened to, you know, having Wade in the low post? I mean, that was something that we saw early in the season, too, where he was just, you know, he was just turning back and rising up over his defenders, multiple defenders at times as he drew double teams. He was able to find shooters on the perimeter. You know, guys like Sean Williams certainly capitalized off of Wade's playmaking ability. I haven't seen that in games. I want to say that I haven't seen that in, like, almost weeks.
You're right.
Wade backs a defender down in the low post and all of a sudden passes to somebody in the perimeter.
Him and Bosch. Him and Bosch have gotten out of the post. And Bosch, when he came back from the injury, said he kind of remembered that he wanted to be back into the post and he wanted to work on it. I really haven't seen it since he got back. So you're right. Both of them really haven't been in the post that much.
And that was, like, part of that glorious ball movement, too,
right?
Because, you know, with plenty of time in the shot clock, you would have Wade back out defender. He's something he's always been able to do just because of his center of gravity, strength, whatever you want to call it. He's, you know, he's certainly prolific when it comes to the low post. And you know, he could easily kick it out to a shooter in the perimeter. If the shot wasn't there, they'd swing it around, and you'd get either Deng or Sean Williams or even Mario Chalmers open in the corner. We talked in a lot last podcast how the corner threes haven't been there for this team. It seems to me like that would be the next step, but, you know, what do I know?
Well, they're going to have to do that on this road trip in order to get some easy baskets, and I think that was the easiest way they moved the ball was with Wade in the post and Bosch kind of trying to be a triple threat, putting the ball on the ground instead of just... That's his comfort zone, Bosch, is on the elbow. He gets the ball and just kind of head fakes a little bit until he eventually puts the shot up. But it was nice when he was putting the ball on the ground and trying to get to the rim and became that triple threat guy. So they're going to need more on those guys. I know when they lost to Houston, Bosch and Wade each scored 15 points, and that wasn't going to cut it, and you end up losing by more than 30 points. And against the Nets, they both were shooting pretty well throughout the game and ended up scoring more than half of Miami's points. So this team, no doubt, live and dies by Wade and Bosch. But if you're right, if they get back into the post and start facilitating a little bit more easily like that, I think we might be able to see more from them. But let's talk about another player on the Heat that's been a breath of fresh air. Hassan Whiteside.
The savior.
The savior, the new governor of Florida that... Whiteside for president. Is he the most... When was the last time Heat fans have been more excited for a quote-unquote prospect-type player? I mean, even James Ennis wasn't... Yeah, like, everybody loved Ennis.
I mean, that's a great topic, though, to discuss or to write about, because it just seems like part of what drives this season so much is kind of hoping that we'll reclaim some of that glory of the last 4 years. And you see, you know, Ennis dunks on Rasul Butler opening night, next thing you know... oh, who needs LeBron James? We've got King James II over here. Shabazz Napier has one good crossover on, I don't even remember, I think it was Andre Miller or something like that. And next thing you know, he's the savior at the point guard position. He hits one three-pointer, and you're looking at him as being the next point guard for the next Hardaway for 10 years or so. And now we've got Hassan Whiteside, all 7'2" of him, grabbing rebounds, doing it at a pretty good rate, I'll admit. But, you know, I think we've been looking for a lot of saviors this season.
Yeah, it seems like there's a theme here. But I think Whiteside's the first bona fide contributor, because James Ennis got very low rotation minutes at first. Shabazz Napier's in the D League now, and he was kind of in and out of his minutes. He had a streak there. I think it was like a 6-game streak there where he was averaging like 14 minutes a game or something. He was actually like playing. Now it's but Whiteside's a key part of this rotation now that they've moved Chris Anderson to the starting center. This rotation of Anderson and Whiteside at center has been refreshing. It's been important. This rim protect, we haven't seen rim protection like this in a long time. He's legitimately affecting shots just with his size. That's something that the Heat haven't had.
Absolutely. I think he's certainly much more physically capable than Greg Oden was, and I think he's comparable size-wise. Maybe he doesn't necessarily have the same timing that Oden did as a shot blocker, because I think you'd have to give Oden some credit as a shot blocker, at least when, you know, he just didn't have the wheels for it anymore. And I know that's a sad look at a player who had a lot of potential once upon a time, but I think Whiteside certainly has some room for growth. I just have to question why nobody took a chance on him over the last 3 years. I mean, you know, he was drafted, actually, it may have been 4 years ago, right, when he was originally drafted. I mean, he spent a lot of time, yeah. Was it 2011 when he was drafted?
I thought it was 2010. Second round?
Okay. Yeah, either way. So, because I know they mentioned in the broadcast that he was actually drafted before Norris Cole. So he's been around a while. I mean, I know he spent those first 2 years in Sacramento. He was hurt. Then he kind of bounced around. Was it China, Lebanon? And I can't remember where else it was.
It was China, Lebanon. He played a little bit in Memphis. I think he was on like a brief, like maybe a 10-day contract or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they waived him earlier this season, and we picked him up, and, I mean, he's been great.
He was the MVP of the Lebanon League.
Was he really?
Yes. I came across this article, I think it was Barry Jackson, Miami Herald wrote it, and he talks about his time in Lebanon, and he just talks about how he had to leave. There's some intense, like, dark stuff in there, that he's seen some stuff in Lebanon, so I'd recommend going and finding that piece.
I will do so.
Yeah. He had to leave. He was the MVP. He was the LeBron James of Lebanon.
I mean, there have been flashes, no doubt. I mean, I guess if you continuously feed him. But that's another thing then also. We're talking about why the Heat have, you know, gone away from Bosch and Wade in the low post. And here you have a legitimate center in Whiteside. They haven't gone to him either. It's been mostly, you know, lobs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been the bulk of his offense. Maybe a couple putbacks here and there. They haven't actually allowed him to create his own shot or anything.
Right.
Like,
well, it's been a lot of pick and roll stuff with him, but nothing just giving him the ball. I don't know if he's got the post moves.
Right.
And that might be why he hasn't been picked up, because he really can't create for himself. But in a pick and roll heavy offense that the Heat have, I think it just works. He just moves like Chris Anderson, and they use Chris Anderson so much in that. Center guard pick and roll, it was just very natural to just kind of slide him in there. And there's seemingly no difference between Anderson and Whiteside when they come in. I don't really notice a change in identity or pace or anything. Whereas when Bosch was center and then they'd move Chris Anderson and play that Anderson-Bosch lineup as when Anderson was a reserve, there was a noticeable change to the identity of the team and just the way it flowed. Now I think it's very comparable. And I don't know why nobody gave Whiteside a chance, but then again, like, why didn't Jeremy Lin get a chance for so many times? And he's a quality point guard, you know. He's not Linsanity, but he's a good reserve, you know, quality player. And that's all we need from Whiteside, right? A good quality reserve. And I don't think anybody expects him to be the, you know, the next Andrew Bynum in his peak, but...
No, I guess you're right. And I wonder how soon before Heat fans start claiming that he needs to start, I guess. You know, that's part of the buzz surrounding him right now, and you have to wonder whether or not they're going to start demanding that he starts. But you're right, though. It's a great point, because I did notice that when they take him out, he's one of the first substitutions. He was last night against Brooklyn. You know, they had their starting lineup in place. They take Birdman out. They put Whiteside and Granger in. And there's not much of a significant drop-off there. I mean, it's
and they're playing about the same amount of minutes, Anderson and Whiteside. You know, there's 48 minutes to spare at center. And I think they play something from 5 to 8 minutes a game with Bosch at center in just in between rotations, just the way the minutes are staggered. So Whiteside and Anderson are getting about the same amount of minutes, if I'm not mistaken, lately at least. Anderson gets a little bit more, I think, but...
Well, just being the starter, I guess.
Right, exactly. But it's not like a drastic difference, I think.
Well, let's see. Actually, Anderson played 21 against Brooklyn, and
right.
Whiteside played 27.
Wow. I didn't even realize that. Because I know, what's Whiteside averaging, like 14 minutes a game?
Yeah, something like that. I think that's gone up. I think at the beginning of the broadcast yesterday, they were saying he was closer to about 11 or so, but now I guess it's probably a little bit higher than that.
Mm.
Yeah, and Granger, I didn't realize he played so much last night. He played 30
He finished the game instead of Luol Deng. I thought that was a major thing in that game, was that Granger was in instead of Luol Deng. I don't even know if Luol Deng played in the fourth quarter, or if he did, it wasn't much.
Looking back, no, I don't think he did. Yeah. Actually, no, you know what it was? Yeah, now, looking back on my notes on the game, it was ridiculous. It was part of the demise there, where all of a sudden Deng picked up 3 really ticky-tacky fouls in like 90 seconds. And it was like halfway through the third quarter where Joe Johnson decided, you know, he was going to take over the game somehow. And he wound up getting Deng into major foul trouble, so he got taken out. I don't think he came back, actually. I want to say he didn't come back.
Yeah, I don't think he did. I don't remember him playing very much in the second half.
But Granger did not have a good night, though. I mean, a positive impact overall, I guess, in that he had 4 rebounds.
I thought he played really well on defense. And I thought I gave him a B on my post-game grades because I thought he played really, really good defense on Joe Johnson at the end. He played 2 really key defensive possessions.
But overall,
he was horrible.
That might have been a little generous, but I think that was... Okay. I think, he was solid. Let's say he was solid, but I don't know if he was B. Let's say maybe C+.
I was on a winner's high after the game, so I kind of gave everybody a...
Yeah, you and the rest of Heat Nation. It's like, we've been... our split personality is starting to show, not just in our podcast, but every time there's a victory, we are all gung-ho about this team, and we're thinking we could actually make it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
It really shows that we're just not... I think most teams go through struggles like this throughout, like a middling team like the Heat. Can you imagine being like the Hawks or the Rockets when they were just kind of middling for so, like, years and years and years? It was just always like this.
And now that they're playing well, how do they handle that kind of success?
Right. The Heat, meanwhile, we had the success in 2006. We always had Wade, but it was like we knew we were waiting for 2010 kind of thing. And then they got really good all of a sudden. And now they're just kind of this middling team again, and I don't know if a lot of Heat fans know how to handle it. I think both of us are clearly struggling with it, with our moods on this podcast. But it's kind of an interesting thing just to kind of step back and look at Heat Nation, so to speak, and just see, okay, well, it's a very different feeling around this team. And I just remember talking about how this might be somewhat refreshing. Where it was just bare bones basketball, I kept calling it. We can just really focus on the game and just kind of step back and just appreciate this team and just try to have fun with it again.
Yeah.
And I think that was extremely, not short-sighted, but...
Naive, maybe?
Naive. Naive's a good word.
It's you know what's been missing? Well, first, I think, and I hate to keep using this as an excuse, but I think there's some legitimacy there, at least early on in the season. There's always the threat of injury. You know, we were playing very well, then Wade gets hurt, McRoberts is in and out of the lineup, and then, you know, Cole gets hurt. So you're kind of always thinking, you know, when's the shoe, as far as injuries are concerned, going to drop? And it never does. You know, now McRoberts is out for the season. Finally, the team is healthy. It's just very hard to put a pulse on this team. And you keep thinking, maybe it's that lingering effect from early on in the season where you keep thinking, well, something's going to turn around. There's going to be an injury. Somebody player is going to get healthy all of a sudden. We're going to go to the next level. I keep thinking that there's some potential for this team. I mean, Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade are really, really good. And they're playing really, really well. overall, yeah, they have bad games. They have weak, you know, weaknesses as far as the fourth quarter and Wade are concerned, maybe. But overall, having really, really solid seasons. And I think you could make a point that Luol Deng has probably exceeded expectations. Maybe he hasn't always been consistent, but he's probably exceeded expectations because he's had so many nice nights, even though he's had some, you know, significant drop-offs there. But it's really hard to, you know, to put to guess how this team is going to move forward on a night-to-night basis. And that's another part of it, then, is like you want to see more consistent effort. Even if there's failure there, I think most Heat fans, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but as long as there's like consistent effort for 48 minutes every night, even if you wind up losing by 20, you would still feel better about it. But there just seems like this, you know, third quarter malaise takes over, and it happened against Houston. I mean, you know, with less than a few minutes left to go in the first half, we were down by 4 to one of the elite teams in the Western Conference that, because of the fact that they have James Harden and Dwight Howard, I mean, those are some matchup nightmares against the Heat, and we were right in it. We were playing very, very decent basketball. We were, you know, I don't know if we had a lead at any point against Houston, but we were pretty, yeah, we did, actually. We had an early lead. We were hanging tight there, and then all of a sudden, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the team just kind of discombobulated. It started with a really stupid foul by Mario Chalmers, as if there's any other kind, of course. You know, where Howard catches the ball, you know, inches away from the rim, and Chalmers decides he's going to hug onto Dwight Howard's left arm, even though Howard can overpower him the way Shaquille O'Neal used to back in his heyday. And that was a three-point play right there. From there, Monta Yunus got hot and started knocking down shots. It was just ridiculous.
Well, the way the Heat used to do things, right? They would just you'd get on a roll, and there was just no coming back, and the team would just step back and realize, holy crap, this team's way faster and stronger than us. So there's no right. Yeah, and they just move the ball so much better than we do.
Yeah, and then the first half ends, you know, you're down, I want to say it's 44-42 at one point, and then the first half ends, and you're down 61-49. And then from there, things just got worse. They started the third quarter on a 25-4 run. I mean, that's depressing. You know, what are you going to do at that point? And so I think as fans, you watch that kind of, you know, game, and that's as demoralizing as it can possibly get. And you think to yourself, man, this team is better than that. What happened to the team that was there for the first 20 minutes of the first half, and then all of a sudden they just not, you know, they don't exist anymore. So I know I kind of rambled on there for a little bit, but it's very hard to put, you know, to figure out what this team is going to be like on a night-to-night basis.
I'll say this. Last season, the theme was, during the regular season, it's just the regular season, let's just make it to the playoffs, right? And that was the entire 82-game stretch, and man, did that get boring. I remember writing for All You Can Heat was just, it was almost a struggle because I didn't know what to write about half the time. It was, okay, this team won. Okay, we lost. All right, LeBron James is amazing. Here's a highlight play. And that was basically, for 82 games, there was nothing to write about. At least I have something to write about now. At least the regular season feels like it counts. At least it feels like it matters now. So maybe not to an entertainment value, aesthetically, is this as good as last year, but at least from an entertainment value, as keeping you somewhat engaged on a night-to-night basis, knowing that a couple games here and there, or one win streak, or one really bad road trip could knock this team out of the playoffs. And there's more on the line, I feel like, and at least there's that, right, for a bright side?
Yeah, I suppose you're right. But again, I just feel like, and maybe it's a continuation of last year where, you know, you bring up a very good point that I guess I'd forgotten, which was that the regular season didn't feel like it counted for anything. And even that kind of lent itself to some frustration because you knew, you know, I had maintained all along that the Heat, even how they were constructed back in 2010, that was capable of being a 70-plus win team. And they fell pretty short of that, except for that one year where they had the 27-game win streak and they were able to win 66 games. You know, this is obviously not as talented and deep a team as the one that we've had over the last 4 years, but you still hope for more, though. And that's part of the frustration, though.
Well, I'm with you. I think this team, there's more potential. I think this team's going to hit, it's going to engage at some point, and I think there's going to be a point this season where we're going to look really, really good. I'm looking right now. there's only two teams in the NBA that have two of the top 12 scorers. It's Miami and Portland. Portland's got LaMarcus Aldridge and Damian Lillard. Dwayne Wade is the eighth best scorer at 23 points a game, and Chris Bosh at 21.3 points a game is at 12. Now, the Warriors are sort of there. They have Klay Thompson at 13, and Stephen Curry is tied with Aldridge at 6 with 23.1 points a game. So they're kind of right there, too. But even if you look at them, we're looking at Portland and Golden State, who are two very successful teams and legitimate contenders in the West, right?
Yeah.
And Miami. That's just... And I know that both of those teams are much deeper than Miami is, and they still have those two scorers. But this team has two legitimate all-star players, right? Like, there's still Chris Bosh, best power forward in the Eastern Conference. Dwayne Wade is the best shooting guard in the Eastern Conference, right? So,
yes.
At least in the Eastern Conference, this team should be competing higher than where it's at right now. Yep. And there's a stretch there against Brooklyn where they looked like a much better team, right? They kind of fell apart at the fourth quarter, but Brooklyn right now is the seventh seed. Miami is the eighth seed. They're right there kind of neck and neck. But Miami during that game, if you look at the best Miami played against Brooklyn and the best Brooklyn played against Miami, Miami looked like a way better team than the Nets, right? Their peak was much higher than the Nets was on Sunday.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you look at their record. I mean, they've got a pretty they were at 500, right? I think 16-16 before last night's game.
Right.
And you struggle to think how that's possible. They've won six or five out of the last six games, something like that. I mean, they've made some big changes as far as benching Deron Williams and Brook Lopez, and those moves seem to pay off. And you look at Brooklyn, and you just don't see any team that's as good as Miami. It's certainly not as good as Miami's capable of. But I mean, you just hope for more out of this team. And maybe you're right, though. I mean, and now I'm struggling, though, and maybe you can help me out with this. Do you think that they're going to – you said that they're going to engage in a positive way, and all of a sudden they're just going to flip that switch maybe and just be much better throughout the course of the season. What if it's the inverse, though? What if they just what if they just fall apart? And you have brought up the T word earlier, and I don't know if you want to even bother getting into it now, but is this team going to tank at some point?
I think – if they tank, it's going to be a mental thing. This team has the talent to be better than the Bucks, to be better than the Nets, to finish ahead of those guys who are currently ranked higher in the Eastern Conference standings. This team has the talent to be one of the top four or five teams in the East. I don't think there's any question about that. But if this team really does struggle to see the point in the season, knowing that they're probably not going to get through the Eastern Conference Finals or into the Eastern Conference Finals, it'll probably be Cleveland in Chicago, right? Or the Hawks. You know, the Hawks are really great. The Wizards are great. I think those four teams are head and shoulders better than the Heat. That's not even a question. So if they don't see the point of getting to the playoffs, I think mentally there might be a reason to tank. And looking ahead, I do see a real reason to tank if you want to keep that top 10 pick. If you want to try to get a top 10 pick and accumulate some assets that they frankly just don't have right now, and they're not going to have much cap room going into 2015, I see a reason to do that. Because you can tank, and you don't necessarily have to take a rookie if Pat Riley doesn't want a rookie. But he could trade a pick in what looks like a very good draft class. And so that could be a very valuable trade asset. So, and almost, you know, flip a top 10 pick for a quality player like Boston did when they got Ray Allen. And that completely changed things for them. So.
Absolutely.
I think there's that opportunity, and I would not be against that, to be completely honest. And there's this narrative that this is just not the Heat way, that Pat Riley doesn't do that, but let's keep in mind, Pat Riley did that before. He's given away, there was a point where they had the worst record in the NBA. That wasn't completely by choice, but you do want to think that loaded draft class of Derrick Rose and Michael Beasley had something to do with them being so bad, right? That season,
yeah.
So
there was injuries to Wade, right? Right?
Wade was hurt.
They were gonna build a consistent, you know, winner or anything like that. So I don't think they gave a whole hell of a lot of effort. That was his last year coaching, was it not?
Yes, it was. And then there was a certain amount of tanking for Dwayne Wade, right? I mean, that team was bare, but I feel like if Pat Riley really wanted, if Pat Riley's all about contending all the time, even if he's going to be a middling team, there's opportunities all around there. You see, like, going 2-3 seasons before the Wade, you know, the Wade draft, before the Beasley draft, where you can build an actual team that looks like this, where they're just kind of between that 6th and 9th place in the Eastern Conference type area, right? I don't buy into this idea that Pat Riley will never tank. That he's above tanking, because I just feel like there have been points in the past where he's kind of foregone a season in order for the bigger picture, and that's almost what they're doing now. And is that any better than tanking? That's my question. If you're just going to look forward to 2016 and just put all your chips on the table for 2016, is that any better than tanking? You're just kind of fooling around.
Well, I'll offer two things. One, I think that when he looks forward to 2016, it's more about managing dollars in a very strategic way so that you have the salary cap structure in place, which he's expecting to, you know, balloon because of the new, you know, television deal, etc. So I think that's different than outright tanking as far as, you know, accruing pretty watered down talent or not even NBA level talent, as you might say from the Philadelphia 76ers, where those players clearly aren't NBA ready and they're trying to field the team at the NBA level and it's not working. So I don't think it's necessarily the same thing as a tanking type situation. It's just being much more creative with your finances and then having to look at the bigger picture. And you know, I know that we had a piece go up earlier today on All You Can Eat about the mistake of looking to 2016, because, you know, it's not a guarantee. You never know where you're going to be able to get out of it. But I think there have been some comments that Riley is committed to building the team in 2016. I don't know how he plans on doing it. He might swing and miss on a number of big-name free agents, but I think that's the plan. So, again, I wouldn't say it's tanking, but I would say it's just trying to be much more creative with how you spend money. And if that winds up being an inferior product, then so be it.
It's not tanking as much as it's just teasing.
I mean, he did it in 2009, 2010. Right. It's like Jermaine O'Neal, you know. If we get something out of him, great. And we did. We got into the playoffs, which was an unexpected bonus, I think, that year. Nobody really expected it. If O'Neal averages, you know, the points that he did during the regular season in the playoffs against the Boston Celtics, we would actually have advanced to the second round. Instead, that guy stunk it up. And I think he finished like 3 points per game or something like that, which is, you know, ridiculous for somebody 6'11". But I don't want to get started on that. The other thing about Riley, though, as far as tanking outright, both times that the team, quote-unquote, tanked, he was coaching on fumes. Mm-hmm. In 2002, 2003, right before they drafted, you know, Dwayne Wade, you know, Alonzo Mourning was hurt. He was on his way out of Miami. It was a team that was poorly built, you know, kind of Mourning had flirted with coming back, but he was never in full strength. And then finally he had the surgery to replace his kidneys, and that was, you know, he was kind of like a shadow hanging over the team. He wasn't really there, and yet he was an albatross contractually because he was taking up so much space. And I think Riley, you know, having read about Riley and the way he, you know, worked with both the Knicks and the Lakers, he's just so emotionally invested in the success of this team that maybe he realized that once he just didn't have the horses to actually win, maybe he just kind of strategically tanked at that point. And then he did the same thing in 2007, 2008, when it was his last season. It was coming off the championship in 2006. You know, he traded away Shaquille O'Neal. Alonzo was hurt. Wade gets hurt. And next thing you know, he has a much better pulse of the team because he's involved on a day-to-day basis. He communicates with them much more clearly. Maybe now that he's resigned himself to the front office and he's not as involved with the team, maybe he trusts Eric Spoelstra to make the right decision. And maybe Spoelstra, being younger, being much more hungry, and you know, quite honestly, having to prove himself this season, because you could say all of his past success was based on having LeBron James on the team, maybe Spoelstra won't allow this team to tank, rather than, you know, saying it's Riley's decision. I mean, clearly, if Riley tells Spoelstra go ahead and tank the season, I guess Spoelstra has no choice, but I don't see Riley being that kind of hands-on dictator maybe I'm wrong about that, but I just don't think tanking in this season, it doesn't seem to equate for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm arguing the point that Riley's above tanking, and I just don't see that.
I think
in the end you have to try to do what you can with Wade and Bosch on this team. You can't do that to them. You can't do that to Spoelstra to just tank. You have to try to compete, and they're gonna do that. You can't tell Wade and Bosch we're tanking. They're gonna go out there and not allow that. They're gonna play hard every game. I firmly believe that the only thing you can do is bench them, right? And that would not go over well in that locker room. I do question, though, if it's 50, 60 games and this team hasn't got engaged, like I said, then you have to really start thinking, okay, maybe they're not really in that Eastern Conference picture. Do you try to at least get into the lottery, maybe, and instead of having the 15th pick in the draft, get into the lottery and just who knows what can happen after that. And that's not really tanking. That's more strategy losing. I don't know.
As a perfect segue, I would go so far as to say that this upcoming road trip has incredible implications as far as how the rest of the season shapes up. Do you agree or disagree? We're talking about a six-game road trip here, right? One, two, three, yeah. Four, five games. Sorry, five-game road trip against some pretty quality opponents.
I don't know, because I kind of am writing off this road trip as a disaster. And then I think it's how they come out of it, I think. So to a degree, I agree with you. It's how they handle this impending disaster, because it's not going to – there's no way they come out of it with a winning record, right? They're just not as – first of all, even on a neutral court, they wouldn't probably, let alone a road trip. This is going to be rough.
Yeah, I mean, it's just enough if they win – and probably if they find a way to win every game, they'd still just be at 500.
Right.
So, I mean, which is good enough at this point for the seventh seed in the East, which,
Yeah, I think it's how they're going to come out of it is going to be key here. Because their first game back after – this is just furthering my conspiracy theory that the NBA hates the Miami Heat above all other teams. They put them on a – five-game road trip after they just came off a six-game road trip or a seven-game road trip or whatever that was. And they say, yeah, thanks. Your first game back is the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then you go immediately back on the road to Charlotte on the second game to a back-to-back. So, yeah, thanks. That's brutal. So we're looking at this five-game stretch, and then immediately after that is Oklahoma and then a back-to-back with Charlotte. So...
that's pretty brutal.
Yeah, especially because Charlotte has Al Jefferson, and Al Jefferson just destroys the Heat. That I'm looking forward to Jefferson versus Whiteside. I'm getting way ahead of myself, but we'll see how things change, Al. Big Al.
Well, would it be, I mean, at this point, yeah, I guess you would probably face him at some point in the first quarter when they take out Birdman early, but it would be a lot of Biak Biyombo, right? Isn't that?
That's true. Bismack Biyombo, maybe some Zeller action. Do they have a Zeller anymore? They still have him, right?
Yeah. He killed us. Remember?
Yeah, that's
he
right.
For whatever reason, and we saw some of this from Teletovich last night in Brooklyn. These kind of tweener forwards that are not quite centers, but they have some shooting range. Zeller was a high energy guy who really he kind of took it to Bosch, and he was a real matchup problem for us for some reason. I don't know why. It's almost like he feels better. And this is, we're talking about on the defensive end. He does better against bigger center types. He's not even guarding them most of the time, but I don't know what it is. Like guys like Zeller, Teletovic, they could really create a problem there. And so, we're looking at the next game against Portland. LaMarcus Aldridge, that seems like a nightmare matchup as well, then.
Before we get into this this preview of schedules, let's talk a little bit about this 10-day contract and guaranteed contract nonsense that's going on.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, like I said, recording this on a Monday, so Tuesday, tomorrow, NBA teams could start handing out 10-day contracts. And Wednesday, teams have to waive players who they don't want their contracts guaranteed. because Saturday is when all NBA contracts become guaranteed. So you allow for a 2-day waiver period. So basically, if the Heat are going to waive Justin Hamilton, Andre Dawkins, or Hassan Whiteside, they're going to do it by Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And Ira Winderman had an interesting article come out this morning. They're going to be most likely on a flight to Portland during that deadline. So somebody can get waived while on the flight, hypothetically, which would be a very, inconvenient trip to Portland. But I wonder if we're going to know if they get waived before then, if they say Justin Hamilton's not making the trip because of concussion-like symptoms, which is code for Justin Hamilton's not making the trip because we're going to waive him.
Right.
My prediction is that that happens. I'm just going to predict that.
You think Justin Hamilton is gone?
I do. I think the emergence of Hassan Whiteside has rendered Justin Hamilton's roster spot available. And I don't know that they necessarily... Sure. Sean Williams, who lit it up, can't even get on the court right now. And Udonis Haslem can't get on the court right now. There's no reason, really, for Justin Hamilton to be on this roster. And he struggled. He really did this season. He never really played well. I don't think he... And 75% of his contract's guaranteed right now, but I think they're going to waive him. I don't think he makes that trip, and I think they blame it on concussion-like symptoms, and then he's waived.
He is hurt right now, isn't he?
He's got concussion-like symptoms.
For weeks now?
Yeah, for weeks, which means to me that he's got concussion, right? I think they're hesitant to say that he's got a concussion because of the stigma that comes with it, but if you have symptoms for, like, 2 weeks, I think you got a concussion.
It's kind of cold-blooded of the team to just waive him, right? I mean, I know it's a business decision that clearly you can't make an exception.
Well, what they can do is they can waive him and then sign him to a 10-day contract, which they did with Justin Hamilton. Oh, no, they didn't do that with Justin Hamilton. Who am I thinking of? The other center that they had, that wasn't Hamilton.
Earlier this year?
No, Harrelson. Remember Harrelson, Josh Harrelson?
Sure.
They did that once with him. They waived him and then signed him to a 10-day and then never signed him again. So that there's a possibility that they waive him and then sign him to a 10-day. Or assign him to the D League again. They could put him. He could still be getting paid to play basketball in the D League. So not as much, but I think it would be a little cold blooded. But it is what it is, right? Like he would just be taking up space on a roster that, quite frankly, could use some more depth. And with the way that some of these prospects are playing for the Sioux Falls Skyforce, I think like Tyler Johnson, Larry Drew II, Kim Birch, we're talking about. I mean, at this point, wouldn't you keep Kim Birch over Justin Hamilton, especially if teams are sniffing around Kim Birch? Because teams could sign Kim Birch to a 10-day contract and then land.
I've already heard that some teams are interested. I can't remember which one specifically. It was a West Coast team. I can't remember who. I want to say the Lakers, maybe. Maybe Utah. I don't remember now.
Could you imagine if this team kept Justin Hamilton and let Kim Birch get away? That would be a huge loss. I mean, just potential wise.
Yeah, I mean, it was the reason we were kind of shaking our heads early in the season. I guess you were hoping that Hamilton would stay healthy and maybe space the floor a little bit more. Clearly, that didn't pan out. And he did wind up being a much more effective rebounder than I had given him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just. He's not going to be on the floor. He's not going to make a contribution. I get the feeling when you're talking about opening up a roster spot for somebody, you've got somebody in mind that you'd like to see them fill it with. And I want to say Larry Drew II.
Yes. This is my theory. This is what happens, right? This is my prediction. They waive Justin Hamilton. They might waive Andre Dawkins.
Ouch.
And although I do think they keep him and they send him back to the D League. But my theory is that they waive Justin Hamilton and use one of their roster spots on Kim Birch or Larry Drew, or Tyler Johnson. Even though I think he's probably the least likely of those three, and just keep them in the D League, just to hold them. So I don't think you'll see anybody join the Miami Heat. I just think that this strategically will be used in order to keep prospects in the D League. because I think the Heat have shown maybe more so than any other NBA team. I'm not necessarily the person to talk about this, but I don't really know any other team that really is utilizing the D-League as much as the Heat are this season, at least in terms of sending your first-round pick back and forth and giving them a ton of minutes on their D-League affiliate.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that other teams are using it a little bit more effectively than we are, but I can't tell you any particular franchise off the top of my head. But you're right. I mean, they are using it maybe a lot more than they have in the past.
Yeah.
I guess they're actively looking at it as a farm system, which is impressive, considering the team has lacked player development from rookies and young players in the past.
So that's my prediction. I think Justin Hamilton's gone. Andre Dawkins doesn't seem like he necessarily needs to be on this roster either. I don't see why he's on the bench. I think maybe it's just for bodies. Maybe that's the only reason. Maybe the coaching staff feels like they can have more of an impact on Dawkins, you know, with the Heat as opposed to him, you know, practicing and getting coached up in the D-League. Maybe they just feel like he needs a little bit more extra attention. I don't know what it is, but he's not playing that much, and I don't really know why they need him. So I think if a shooting guard becomes available, I think they really do need a shooting guard. I don't know if James Ennis hasn't been very effective. He's kind of the backup shooting guard by default just because Spoelstra wants to avoid playing Chalmers and Cole together now. So, and Ennis is really the only other shooting guard on the roster. So if another shooting guard becomes available, I could see them going after a shooting guard. But I just don't know that that's going to happen.
And Napier was getting some minutes as the two guard in Sioux Falls.
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I know he started his first game, but I thought that was a point guard.
I think with Drew, I think he started as a point guard, and then Napier was getting minutes as a combo guard there. So I don't know if that's something. I mean, clearly he's too short at the NBA level. I just don't see how that would work out.
Right. All right. Well, is there any names that you're looking at as this waiver guaranteed contract deadline approaches?
Well, no, not really. I guess two guard is probably the biggest position of need, because I guess you don't think, or rather, the team doesn't think that Dawkins can fill it adequately enough.
Right.
Which is a little surprising, because, I mean, from what I remember of him, maybe they're not seeing something in practice. It's just, it's hard to tell, and I know that we're kind of, you know, our perspective is not a fully formed one based on the fact that we're not there at every practice, and we don't see what the front office and coaching staff sees. But, I mean, from what we did see of Dawkins, clearly he was, you know, he's young, athletic, hell of a shooter,
yeah.
And he seemed like a pretty earnest defender. Maybe not necessarily, you know, maybe not, you know, a ball hawking type incredible defender like a Dennis Rodman or a Joe Dumars or somebody like that. But I mean, a pretty solid defender overall. And yet, wouldn't you think that he might be a slight upgrade over Ennis, kind of playing out of position there?
I don't know, because Dawkins did play a couple of garbage minutes where he missed those two. Like, he took a couple of three-pointers basically as soon as he came off the bench and missed both of them. Was that against the Rockets?
Yeah.
Okay. He blew a defensive assignment also right away. He just completely blew it. So maybe, you know how Spoelstra always talks about that rope? He's not really on that rope. He doesn't know where that rope is. Though I think just a one-on-one defender, he's not bad, but on rotations and help, I think that's where he... Also, I'm judging this off of literally one possession where he just really blew it, and that was after he hasn't played in how many games, right? So
right.
It's really, like, you can't really draw much, if anything, from it. But if that's – I imagine that's usually the issue that Spoelstra keeps guys benched for. I imagine that's why Sean Williams isn't getting many minutes. So
– Well, he seems to be comfortable now with Granger playing right. You know, 30-plus minutes against Brooklyn, even when he went 1 of 7. And I know you said he had – some pretty good defense against Joe Johnson towards the end of the game, but I mean, how do you justify the first 25 minutes that he was in the game? And I know that, you know, Luol Deng was in foul trouble, etc., but, you know, they're just not going. Maybe he feels more comfortable or with Granger, and that he provides some more flexibility, and that he could play him. You could theoretically play him at the two guard. You could play him at the small or power forward position. So,
well, that's what I wonder. If you want to keep Chalmers and Cole off the floor, can't you just play Wade at point guard? Now, I'm not saying start Wade at point guard, but I'm surprised we haven't seen the lineup of Wade and Granger in the backcourt, or even if it's not Granger, Ennis, if you're more comfortable with Ennis for whatever reason. But I think Granger would probably be better. Sean Williams, Dang, or... Sean Williams or Dang, I'm sorry. And then Chris Anderson and Bosch.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm surprised we haven't seen that lineup. I think we would have seen that lineup at some point if Spoelstra was really going to try to mix it up a little bit. But I get the sense he's looking more for some regularity and consistency than he is trying to mix it up right now. So maybe after a few games we'll see something like that.
Because I mean, they went with a lineup yesterday of Whiteside, Granger, Ding, Wade, and Cole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why you couldn't take Cole out, or you know, and have Wade slide over, and then bring in either Bosch. If you know, if he's tired, I guess you could always bring in. You know, Sean Williams, who played a number of minutes at the power forward position. I mean, that's a pretty big lineup, and you have a good mix of shooting range there, and and Williams and Dang, and Granger can all hit the three. You've got ball handling there from Wade. I mean, you got a low post presence theoretically in Whiteside. I mean, that seems like a pretty well balanced lineup there. Maybe Spoelstra hasn't thought of implementing it just yet. I mean, we're looking at the blossoming, if you will, of Whiteside. So maybe as the season progresses and if he keeps showing some more growth, maybe you'll see more traditional lineups there. And maybe, you know, if he feels like he can change it around a little bit, you know, if he wants to keep an ineffective Cole and Chalmers off the floor altogether, maybe he will go with Wade at the point guard position.
So before we get into the previews, the main takeaway, I think, from this entire podcast is that you and I both think that there's more to this team, that this team at some point will look a lot better than it looks now, right? We just have that feeling?
Yes, and we might be dead wrong.
Well, there's always that, but you and I both have that feeling that's based on very loose guesses and inklings.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a hope there.
There's
a feeling and a hope, and we... Like I said, we could wind up in 2 weeks going, Jesus Christ, what the hell happened during that road trip? But let's hope that's not the case.
Well, let's talk about this road trip. Cereal or not cereal?
Portland, definitely cereal.
At Portland Thursday, absolutely cereal. Damian Lillard just eats cereals of nails, like nail cereal. That guy is unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm hoping against hope that maybe Chalmers just realizes he has to play a huge game against arguably the best young point guard in the league now.
Jesus.
I mean, and maybe he can defend him, maybe he can stay or, you know, keep him earnest, you know, limit his production somewhat, because otherwise we could be seeing a monster game from Lillard where we'll be blown out by the second quarter and there's no hope of us coming back.
So the Trailblazers have in... incredibly efficient point guard rotation of Lillard and then Steve Blake coming off the bench, right?
Right.
Who's a very good point guard, very good reserve point guard, I mean.
Miami, by the way.
Right, and the Heat are trotting out Chalmers and Cole, who, I just wrote a piece on this, is statistically the worst point guard combination by far in the NBA.
All right.
So... So that's, I'm assuming, the mismatch that Portland is going to be targeting?
You think? I'd say so. Brook Lopez is still out. Do they have Kamen starting?
Robin Lopez, you mean?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
No problem. Yeah, no problem.
The wrong twin. Yeah. Is he out?
Sideshow Robin. I don't know if he's going to be out. That's all the way to Thursday. It's so, like, the game's not until Thursday. I have no idea.
But he hasn't been playing as a player.
Right. But I don't know exactly what the extent of his injury is. I can look it up right now.
They're starting. I guess they started the previous game. I guess they feel comfortable with Kamen coming off the bench. They started Joel Freeland.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think they like that Kamen and Steve Blake combo.
Yeah.
Does a lot for them on that second unit. Check our... fan-sided Portland Trailblazers affiliate, the Rip City Project. Let's see what they have to say about this Robin Lopez fella.
Great website.
Awesome website.
Never been on there before.
Have you not?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We all all support our fan-sided websites. And make sure to go check out Thunder's Intentions.
Yeah, the editor is pretty cool over there.
I heard he can be a little bit problematic.
Well, he's new, so you got to give him a break.
The writers are planning a mutiny as we speak.
So, Rip City Project is reporting that as of right now, it doesn't appear Lopez will be back until January 26th. So,
no longer our problem.
Right, there you go. No more Sideshow Robin for us. Instead, we're dealing with Joel Freeland, who I actually wrote an in-depth piece about once upon a time about. So I'm very well acquainted with Joel Freeland.
Did you think he had potential that he has yet to realize?
I think he practices verticality very well.
Oh, really?
So look out for verticality. Roy Hibbert-like verticality.
I haven't seen that called all season, though. I'm trying to think if that's been a... They've been shying away from it somewhat?
Yeah, it seemed like more of a thing last year, right?
Yeah, I think didn't Adam Silver make a point against it?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to say that it was one of those, you know, POEs or whatever at some point when he took over, and I think they were looking at the rule a little bit more closely, and I think even Hibbert had some comments about it because obviously he'd been a beneficiary of the calls, but anyway.
So Portland is serial and probably a loss, but who knows? The Heat have all week pretty much to prepare for that game.
Yeah.
Three days to prepare for that game.
I mean, the Chris Bosh Aldridge matchup, that's got to be a key one, right?
Right. And remember, I think you pointed out on the last podcast that Bosh played really well in last year's matchup.
He was responsible for both victories in that. He secured a rebound, and then he also had the big three-pointer to seal the game.
And so now with Bosh firmly at power forward, they're going to be going at each other from the get-go, and we'll have Chris Anderson and Joel Freeland going at each other. So that'll be a little bit of a different dynamic. Of course, we saw the Heat, and I think we'll see something similar to this against Portland in terms of the backcourt defensive assignments. We saw, what was it against Houston? We saw...
Dang guarding Patrick Beverley?
Was it Dang on Beverley or Dang on Harden?
I want to say that Dang was on Beverley, and I think Chalmers was on Harden for a lot of the time.
And then Wade would have been on Ariza. That's right. That's how it was. You're right. So maybe we see something similar to that, where we see maybe Dang on Lillard.
Yeah, and Wade on Batum. That seems like a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, and then they just put Chalmers on Wesley Matthews.
Oh, that's a combustible matchup, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Wes Matthews can pretty much. Wes Matthews is actually very underrated in the post, and I think he might take advantage of that. So maybe.
We could be seeing, you know, Chalmers foul out within the first 2 minutes of the game.
So Wes Matthews has a huge game. Wes Matthews has his season high in points. That's my prediction. He scores. He goes. I don't know. Let's see what his season high in points is, and I'll go one or two over that. So let's talk serial or not serial. Los Angeles Clippers on Sunday.
That's serial, but they're starting to become much less serial than I would have expected.
Trouble in that locker room is what's being reported, right?
Yeah.
So that's not very serial.
No, I don't know. It's just they've.
Oh man, Wes Matthews' season high is 28 points twice.
I could see 29 points clearly.
29, 30, 40, 81.
That seems like pushy. Those are Kobe numbers. I don't think he gets that kind of usage rate out of Portland.
No. All right, something around 28. That's what I'm predicting. He scored 28 points against the Knicks.
We're a better defending team than they are.
That's true. 26 points? I was originally going to predict 22, so I'm going to hold strong at 22 points for Wes Matthews.
We'll see. You know, again, if they do wind up rotating the defense around a little bit, Chalmers could either be, you know, inspired that, you know, Lillard, supposedly his counterpoint is off there, you know, being guarded tightly by Dang, and then maybe he could... You know, maybe he'll take his game to the next level. We've seen good Mario at some points this season. I'm hoping that we'll see it again. And maybe this is the matchup for it, you know?
We have? We've seen good Mario?
I mean, when Wade was out, I mean, he was spectacular.
Oh, that's true. That's Come true. On, so Wade wrong. Can't play, basically. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, he was...
Yeah, he was.
It's so confusing because we saw great games from him at some point where he seemed like he was really in check and much more, dare I say it, mature than he's been in the past, much more in control.
And then he has games like last night where he turns the ball over twice in the first two possessions.
Yeah, bingo.
So, all right, Los Angeles Clippers, not, well, sort of serial, but losing that serial on a day-to-day basis, right?
Yeah, and this is Sunday afternoon at 3:30.
Yeah, that's a weird game.
And not on TV. I get the feeling that if the Heat had probably a slightly better record, than it might have been a nationally broadcast game. But either way, we've been terrible on national broadcast, which, I'm looking at it right now, Portland is on TNT that night, which I think we're 0-2 on TNT, are we not?
Yeah, we are.
So that does not bode well. But anyway, the Clippers, they blew us out last time.
I mean,
dirty style. I mean, there was no coming back from that. I think we were clearly overmatched from the first few minutes of the game. It was one of those really bad games where we just had no answer early on. Constant lob passing.
So now we have Hassan Whiteside and Chris Anderson. Was Chris Anderson healthy for that first Clippers game? I'm trying to remember. No,
he wasn't. I want to say no, he wasn't.
Because he was out for a lot of the first part of the season. So, and then he had that time in the middle. So I don't think he was. So now the Heat have Bosch playing on Blake Griffin. Should be fun. Two kind of finesse-type power forwards, right?
Right.
And then Hassan Whiteside against his ceiling, DeAndre Jordan, if you listen to what Udonis Haslem says about Whiteside.
Oh, is that what he said? He compared him to Jordan?
He said he's got – I got a piece coming out probably tomorrow, Wednesday. I haven't completely finished it yet, but – yeah, he said that he could beat DeAndre Jordan, which would be nice, because I think a lot of Heat fans look at DeAndre Jordan and his expiring contract and wonder if that's going to be a possibility down the line. But
okay, I don't want to meander too much here, because I know we're kind of previewing here. But what is it that you think Whiteside needs to develop? Then, I mean, clearly, I hate to be, you know, nitpicky here, but he seems a little soft, right? I mean, he needs to lose some weight and kind of like bulk up a little bit at the same time.
Yeah, I think that comes with NBA conditioning, right? Because he's been lifting weights in Lebanon for who knows how long. So I think, yeah, his conditioning needs to improve a little bit. And I think he just needs to get some post moves. He showed that little skyhook type. It wasn't quite a skyhook, but it was sort of a skyhook, which was like very surprising. It took kind of Heat Twitter by storm. They were like, wow, he's got a skyhook now. So, and then we heard what Hakeem Whiteside jokes on Twitter and got a little out of hand. But this is how desperate Heat fans are, Nation.
Yes.
We got one skyhook, and all of a sudden we have Hakeem Olajuwon on our hands.
Or Kareem Whiteside, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I think we saw that one. That makes more sense. I think just creating for himself, maybe. If they could throw it in to Whiteside and just let him make a move here or there. Because we haven't seen, like, shoulder fakes or pump fakes or really anything from him. It's all lobs. It's all pick and roll, catch on the run type stuff, catch in the air type stuff. So if he could do that, then I think that would be huge. Just an actual offensive threat. He makes himself available on offense, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And he does run that pick, and that's an underrated thing for centers, is being able to pick and then roll seamlessly, which he does. And that's improved from when he first started. He was really bad at it, or looked uncomfortable doing it. And I think after he's gotten acclimated to his teammates and just the offense in general, he looks a lot more comfortable every game running that pick and roll. So, yeah, I think just creating for himself. What do you look at?
I'm sorry, I was actually jumping ahead to look at the Clippers matchup there. I guess Wade didn't play in the first game. Looking back now, it seems like he wasn't there. So that could be an interesting game there as far as, you know, maybe looking to prove himself in L.A. a little bit. Norris Cole started along with Chalmers, and we wasted a really good game from Chris Bosh. I don't remember this game that much, but I guess he scored 28 points. He was a very effective 9 of 17 from the floor. And Napier had 17 points off the bench. So this could be an interesting one against the Clippers.
We're kind of a completely different team than we were in that first game.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Did I throw you off track completely with Whiteside there?
No, absolutely not. I could talk about Whiteside and then transition to Clippers games all day long.
You're amazing. This is why you you run the podcast.
That's a loss, right? That Clippers game. I mean, I can't.
I want to go out on a limb and say that we might be able to pull out a victory there.
Going from Lillard to Chris Paul,
who had a monster game against us. Yeah. Well, you know, 26 points, but really effective, 8 of 13
shooting. Like Chris Paul always plays us well. I mean, he plays everybody well, right? That's kind of Chris Paul's thing. But
yeah, but not with LeBron there. I mean, that was just. I don't know if there was like a big brother, little brother kind of mentality there, and maybe he shied away a little bit with LeBron in tow, but I can't recall a big game from him over the last 4 years with LeBron here.
I always felt like he was just efficient. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know what I'm talking about most of the time. Yeah, maybe. Those afternoon games are always weird, though. I hate those Sunday afternoon games. I can't stand them.
So, I mean, we play on Thursday night, and then, you know, that's a late game.
Right.
And then we all of a sudden move to this game on Sunday. So we have a couple days there.
Saturday night in L.A. And then you play in the afternoon-ish. That's not enough time for the hangover to go away. Right?
No, probably not.
Yeah, I don't like the feeling.
Well, you make it there for Friday, though. That's the whole thing, though. Maybe they'll be there. Maybe they'll travel immediately, be in L.A. on Friday night, get it out of their system, and they can call it an early Saturday so that they can wake up on Sunday.
Now, that doesn't sound like a team from Miami, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No, you got to party both nights.
I don't know. You know, Dang, Wade, Chris Bosh, they're a little more responsible than that, right? I mean,
I don't know. I don't trust Chalmers.
Justin Hamilton won't be there anymore. He's the biggest party animal on the team, clearly.
That's true. Isn't he from, where's he from? He's from Milwaukee,
Utah?
Right? Utah. You're right. He's Mormon. Yeah, he's definitely the biggest partier. Absolutely. I knew it was something weird like that. Okay.
Not weird.
And then they
get not different.
Whatever. And then they play. They have to stay in LA because they have the Lakers on Tuesday.
That's great. That's what I'm saying. That's pretty convenient. So I'd say we definitely pull out a victory there. You know, Wade's going to look forward to that. I guess this isn't the last matchup against Kobe, right? But I mean, it's second. Or it's one of them. It's one of them. So I think
they play again in March.
Yeah, this should be a good game. I think we could pull the LA sweep there. I think we go 2-0 in LA.
All right.
Well, you know what? I've been off completely. I'm just going to change it completely. I say we win at Portland and then we lose the next four games.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's so hard to predict this team.
I think it's 5-0 just as easily as you can go 0-5, right?
Well, it'd probably be a little bit harder to go 5-0.
Okay, 4-1. I would say Golden State represents the toughest matchup, right?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I might go to this game. It's in Golden State Wednesday night. I might go to that one.
Can you get credentials?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'll try. You know what? I'm not going to try. I'll probably just buy tickets. I don't know if I can handle credentials for that game.
Too insane.
Everybody's got Golden State Warrior fever around here, and I'm all in it. You know, Warriors, they're my West Coast team. I'll watch them, and I'll root for them. But if they're playing the Heat, I can't stand them. So I might not be able to handle objectivity in the press box for that game.
No, I'm seeing a lot of negativity on Twitter regarding Golden State, that they're like, it's definitely second class sports citizens out there.
What?
Like, well, I mean, I saw a piece by ESPN's, what is it, Ethan Sherwood-Strauss?
Yeah.
I think he tweeted out something about the fact that when it comes to the Warriors, it's all Giants, 49ers, maybe Raiders. And then eventually you get around to talking about the Warriors?
Yes, that's absolutely true. It's weird being in a baseball town. Everybody talks about the Giants every day. Oh my gosh, did you hear what the Giants did? Oh my gosh, the Oakland A's lost some player. I don't watch baseball. I'm not a baseball guy. After the Marlins got rid of Miguel Cabrera, I wrote baseball off and just in general as a sport. So, everybody talks about baseball here. Everybody wants to talk about the Niners and Jim Harbaugh. Or who the new coach in Oakland are going to be. Talk about a Dolphins fan living in the Bay Area. Tony Sparano could end up coaching the Raiders, and Rex Ryan could end up coaching the Niners.
Wait, did Sparano, was he just an interim coach?
Yeah.
Oh, my
Yeah, so I can get Sperano and Rex Ryan both in the Bay Area. That'll be fun.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I can reunite with Sperano. That'll be great. Anyway, yeah, the Warriors are. But the thing is, with the Warriors fans are diehard. They love their Warriors. People that are Warriors fans will talk Warriors number one overall all the time. But
okay.
Strauss is absolutely correct. It's Giants, both baseball teams, both football teams, and then the Warriors in general.
That's bizarre because Miami's clearly not a baseball team.
Yeah, it's been a very weird transition to me. It's been a very weird transition for me.
Interesting.
I've actually refound my love for baseball, not love, like general pleasure.
Appreciation, yeah.
Yeah, general appreciation for baseball. I went to an Oakland game. I went to a San Francisco Giants game. It's nice watching a baseball team in a baseball park as opposed to a football stadium or a baseball arena. So, anyway, Golden State Warriors are cereal, though.
They are. But I was just thinking, maybe we're jumping too far ahead if we're going to do a podcast later next week.
I think we are, but I kind of want to just knock this whole road trip out of the way. What do you think?
That sounds good to me. I think Golden State, like we said, clearly the toughest matchup. Bogut will still be out, but somehow, and you'd know more about it than I would, it seems like they just keep inserting pieces in there. They're playing this small ball that's creating matchup nightmares all over the place and thriving. You know, I think Draymond Green had his first career triple-double.
Yeah, he's been out of his mind. He's been playing so well.
Spates is playing pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got David Lee and Iguodala, you know, career starters, pretty decent players overall. I mean, they've got their weaknesses clearly, but I think they, you know, they're pretty solid players. They're off the bench now and being extremely productive in limited minutes.
Sean Livingston's there now. This has the makings of another Rockets 30-point blowout.
Oh, does it ever? I don't see any window there for Miami, which clearly means that Miami will win by 18. Because it just seems so grim. I mean, I'm trying to think, the way that team plays, the pace with which they play is against everything that Miami does. The matchups, the speed, individually, position to position, they just beat the Heat at every position. There's no matchup where we have a clear advantage there. None.
No. Nothing.
I mean, even a power forward...
Draymond Green is playing really, really good defense. He's going to match up really well with Bosch.
Right. So, I mean, Anderson versus Spates, I mean, that's not really much of a matchup there. I just don't see anything where... and the bench, forget about it. Their bench clearly blows our...
My prediction for this game is that this game starts off fairly close with both starting units in, and then once the benches come in, the Warriors blow us out. I think a lot of casual fans will look at that power forward matchup and say, "Oh, well, Bosch has got an opportunity there because Draymond Green's undersized." But that's been his strength this season, is his kind of tweener thing between a small forward and a power forward type size. Is he's got the agility and quickness that he could stay in front of a guy like Bosch, but he's also just kind of thick and stocky almost. So he's kind of got the strength too, and it's just. I mean, he's not small. He's 6'8". So,
could we see like a really big Whiteside game there? What do they have? Like, what is it? Festus?
Festus Ezeli. Yeah.
Ezeli. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe
he would come off the bench, right? I mean, versus Whiteside.
I think that's an opportunity there. I do think there's an opportunity for a big Dwayne Wade game
against Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I think Dwayne Wade. You know how he gets up for these types of games, and he's going to say, "No, Klay, you're still not better than me." And he might go off for that game.
Yeah, I wanted to think that against Houston also, and then he did it against Harden. So
yeah,
but maybe they have that same defensive mix up there, or where they have Dang on Curry. Although that seems like a really bad matchup there.
Well, anybody against Curry right now, right?
Right. Well, Jesus. Yeah. I mean, there's no way of staying in front of him. I mean, tonight they play Oklahoma City, and Westbrook might be one of the few guys that can match up athletically, and it's just a different. I mean, he's unconscious, right? I mean, it's ridiculous the way he just steps back and pulls up from anywhere and knocks down these shots. So, I mean, that could be a really long night for Miami.
Friday at Sacramento. The Kings are not cereal. They used to be cereal, and they're so not cereal anymore after firing Mike Malone.
I mean, it's just, I don't even know what they are. They're like nails soaked in gasoline or something like that. It's just a really unpleasant combination.
Yeah, I think they're like cold oatmeal.
Ooh.
And not even the good, like, dinosaur egg kind. Just nasty oatmeal.
Low sugar or something like
that.
Yeah,
like sugar-free green apple flavored oatmeal or something.
That is the worst.
Yeah, oatmeal that just... Oatmeal that's gone wrong. That's what the Kings are this season.
Oh my God. Does oatmeal turn? I guess if you use milk or something like that, that turns, right? Or,
I think so. I think that's what's going on here.
You don't even use milk. You use, like, water. And it's like... Oh. Rusty water.
Yeah, you've ran out of milk and you're desperate for oatmeal, so you use water that's not even filtered through a Brita or anything.
Is there ever an occasion where you're desperate for oatmeal?
When you fire Mike Malone, you might be desperate for oatmeal.
And who's the fifth player that gets left out of eating the oatmeal then?
I think only Boogie Cousin. I think he eats all the oatmeal.
So instead of being 4 and 5, he's the fifth player. Everybody else is off there doing their thing, and he's actually eating the oatmeal. So that's interesting.
Yeah, Rudy Gay really wants the oatmeal, but he can't have any.
I can see a big game from Rudy Gay against Miami.
Yeah, it just seems like one of these guys will have a huge game, I think. And this just feels like a game where somebody goes off, right? That random Heat killer.
But still enough for Miami to pull out with a victory?
You know what? I would love, on a neutral court, they win, but it's the last game on this exhausting road trip. You never know how the Heat are going to react to it.
Especially if they're getting blown out on the Wednesday prior against Golden State.
Right. If I was betting $1 on it, I'd say the Heat beat Sacramento.
Yeah.
But who knows, right?
And we'll probably address this in next week's podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I think that takes care of that road trip. 2-4? What's the best?
It's 5 games, so it's, 2-3.
Two and three.
Or 4-1, or 0-5.
Or 5-0.
No, we already admitted 5-0 seems really, really unlikely. That's the least likely scenario. Above that, I have to say 4-1 is the second least likely scenario. Then 0-5, because I think we could probably beat the Lakers fairly handily.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, it's anybody's guess. We could go 3-2, 2-3.
Do you think there's going to be a bit of looking ahead after that Clippers game to that Lakers game? It seems weird, but I feel like the Heat look at this road trip and say, okay, we could definitely beat the Lakers, right? So they have to come out of this road trip with a win against the Lakers, right? And I wonder if they just get to stay in L.A. for those 4 days or whatever it's going to be. As weird as it sounds, there might be like a looking ahead to the Lakers saying, this is the game we know we can win if we just get up for it.
I just realized right now you're talking about the Lakers game, and that's the first of a second night or a two-night back-to-back Golden State's on Wednesday after we face the Lakers on Tuesday.
Right. They're going to have to fly out immediately after that Lakers game.
A 24-hour turnaround.
Or they could take the... You hear about this tunnel that can just take you from L.A. to the Bay Area in 30 minutes that they're trying to build?
No, I haven't. I was part of the team that built the Port of Miami tunnel, so I don't want to really talk too much about transportation and tunnels anymore. But
okay.
I hadn't heard anything about it, so you can inform our listeners if you want.
No, that was about it.
That's it.
I don't know how it works.
Well, I could go on about transportation and planning for hours.
Well, it turns out I think we're kind of running out of time on this podcast, David.
Yeah, that could be a really boring one. half an hour, huh, from L.A. to San Francisco?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. It's something like by the end of the decade they'll be able to do it. So not in time for this road trip, basically. But it would cut like a 6-hour drive into 30 minutes. But they're working on... forget it. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Is that how long it takes to travel there, basically, from L.A. to...
I've never done the drive, but people tell me it's like 5 or 6 hours. But it could take you up to like 8 or 9 hours if you hit traffic, because California traffic is insane.
Oh, yeah.
So, but they're working on a tunnel now that will... Or a train that'll take you... Like a bullet train that'll go in 3 hours or something. So, construction starts tomorrow. For any Bay Area listeners.
you're on the tip there. You
no,
know
I saw a tweet about it. I saw a tweet about it, and it had a picture. So I was like, oh, that's a cool-looking thing. What is that? And that was it. That was all in 100... I know everything I know about this in 140 characters or less.
Don't get suckered in by those pictures and images.
No, I always get suckered in by those. Especially the men's health ones on Twitter. I don't know. I'm probably going to cut all this out.
Excellent. or leave it in. I think this is what really draws our listeners to the show.
Yeah, I think that's what they appreciate it for. They come for the heat and they stay for this stuff.
Should we tease the upcoming podcast?
We've got a alternative heat check, would you say, David?
Yeah, I would think so. How about if we call it Heat Check at the Movies?
Heat Check at the Movies. That's what's coming up next. We're going to record it at some point this week and then publish it also this week. So look out for that. You can check my writing out. You can check David's writing out at allyoucanheat.com. Find the podcast on SoundCloud. Find the podcast on iTunes. Subscribe. Say nice things about us when you rate us. Give us a 5-star review because we deserve it for our ramblings that you enjoy so much.
Absolutely.
We'll be back again next week. Thanks for joining me, David.
Always.